Chapter 2. The Sign of the Covenant. And I will make my covenant between me and you, and I will multiply you exceedingly. Genesis 17, verse 2. As we have already noted, most biblical covenants involve the cutting of flesh and are sealed in blood. The blood, of course, is symbolic of the life that exists within the blood. Yet there is the other aspect of it as well, cutting or removing flesh. For instance, when God affirmed the covenant with Abraham, it was through the rite of circumcision. This is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you and your descendants after you. Every male child among you shall be circumcised, and you shall be circumcised in the flesh of your foreskins, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and you. He who is 8 days old among you shall be circumcised, every male child in your generations. He who is born in your house or bought with money from any foreigner who is not your descendant. He who is born in your house and he who is bought with money must be circumcised. And my covenant shall be in your flesh for an everlasting covenant. And the uncircumcised male child who is not circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin, that person shall be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant. Genesis 17, verses 10 through 14. First, please note that God made the covenant with Abraham and his descendants after him, later known as Israel. To be regarded as part of this family, however, it was required that the males remove a piece of flesh from their bodies through circumcision. In part, this speaks to the essence of the covenant God has made with his people. He commits completely to them and desires that they reciprocate in like manner. Love the Lord with all your heart. For his part, we see that the covenant is backed by the eternal authority of God's name. In fact, 16 times the name Yahweh is used in conjunction with the covenant he made with Israel. You could say it is his covenant name. One example of this is found when God introduced himself to Moses. And God spoke to Moses and said to him, I am the Lord. I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob as God Almighty. But by my name, Lord, I was not known to them. I have also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land of their pilgrimage, in which they were strangers. And I have also heard the groanings of the children of Israel whom the Egyptians keep in bondage, and I have remembered my covenant. Therefore say to the children of Israel, I am the Lord. I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. Exodus chapter 6, verses 2 through 6. The importance of these verses in our context is that God was linking his sacred name, Yahweh, to the covenant made with the patriarchs, and now the nation of Israel. In other words, he was putting his reputation as the Eternal One and only true sovereign on the line in the sight of the entire universe. If he didn't keep his part of the covenant, his name would be profaned, and he wasn't about to let that happen. Consequently, the covenant with his people is backed by his word, which according to Isaiah, does not fail. So shall my word be that goes forth from my mouth. It shall not return to me void, but it shall accomplish what I please, and it shall prosper in the thing for which I sent it. Isaiah 55, verse 11. The psalmist said, My covenant I will not break, nor alter the word that has gone out of my lips. Psalm 89, verse 34. The fact that this has always been and remains true today explains why the empires and nations that have come against Israel, Jerusalem, and his people suffer calamity and eventually die. When Pharaoh pursued Israel into the sea, it cost Egypt 600 chariots, 50,000 horsemen, and 200,000 footmen, not to mention that Egypt has never regained the power and grandeur she enjoyed before touching God's anointed. When the Assyrians laid siege to Jerusalem, the result was that 185,000 of them were slain by a plague sent by an angel. The Babylonians, though once one of the greatest empires known to man, were defeated and vanquished in one night because of their contempt for God and his people. The list continues on. The Greeks were defeated by the Maccabees and eventually declined. The Romans, though great in power and influence, were eventually overrun by barbarians and devolved into economic decay. Nation after nation has come and gone, shining brightly for a moment, but then fading into oblivion, never to recover their past glory. The prophet noted, "They are dead. They will not live. They are deceased. They will not rise. Therefore you have punished and destroyed them, and made all their memory to perish. You have increased the nation, O Lord. You have increased the nation. You are glorified. You have expanded all the borders of the land." Isaiah 26, verses 14 and 15. Yet consider Israel. At one time, she was considered to be a conquered and extinct nation. But as we know, Israel still exists. In Hebrew, it would be said, Am Yisrael Chai, the people of Israel live. Here is why. Israel, Jerusalem, and God's people have a divine covenant with the Creator of the universe. Attack them, and it is equivalent to attacking God Himself. And as we pointed out earlier, God keeps His covenant because it is His name, His word, and His reputation that are on the line. Thus we conclude that without fail, God has been true to keep His covenant with His people. So what does He want from us? That we would love the Lord with all your heart and be faithful to the covenant. Let's put it this way. The reason we were born again was so that in and through the Messiah, we could learn how to die to our flesh. As we know, flesh is emblematic of a carnal nature, our desires, passions, and inclinations. We also know one cannot please God if he gives in to the deeds of the flesh. Paul said, "The carnal mind is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God, nor indeed can be. So then, those who are in the flesh cannot please God." Romans 8, verses 7 and 8. This concept brings us back to the rite of circumcision and the covenant made with Abraham and his seed, the removal of flesh, and how it hints at the cost incurred on us if we are to be in covenant with God. If we are to be faithful, we must die to ourselves and our carnal desires every day. Jesus said, "If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will save it." Luke 9, verses 23 and 24. Our flesh has to be crucified, and we must be willing to present ourselves as a living sacrifice, saying no to our will. Moreover, this requires more than just a cut in the flesh of our physical body. Actually, it is something that should be conceived and manifested in our heart. Moses said to Israel, "Therefore, circumcise the foreskin of your heart and be stiff-necked no longer." Deuteronomy 10, verse 16. Later he said, "And the Lord your God will circumcise your heart and the heart of your descendants to love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, that you may live." Deuteronomy 30, verse 6. It is clear that circumcision of the heart was what God desired and intended from the very beginning. Yes, he required that Abraham and his seed fulfill the physical aspect of this as well, but as we are admonished to acknowledge, the physical manifestation is given to teach us of the spiritual principle, according to 1 Corinthians 15, verse 46. It also becomes clear that it is impossible for us to love God with all our hearts until and unless our hearts have been circumcised by God. That would also indicate that, unless we have been circumcised in our hearts, we cannot be faithful to the covenant with God. We can say we love God, can call ourselves believers, and can display the trappings that go along with being a God-fearer. However, as Paul points out, that means nothing if the outward signs are not a true reflection of the heart. For he is not a Jew who is one outwardly, nor is circumcision that which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew who is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, not in the letter, whose praise is not from men, but from God. Romans 2, verses 28 and 29. this discussion has been intended to bring us to this all-important point. True circumcision is designated by God to be a sign, in Hebrew, ot, of the covenant between him and Abraham and those identifying themselves as the seed of Abraham. In Genesis 17, the Hebrew root word for sign means to communicate, signaling. The Bible uses this term to indicate a mark, a token, or monument. Thus, it is the marker that says to the Creator and to the world, I belong to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, something that is not to be taken lightly. The word ot is, in fact, used to signify an emblem, an ensign, or flag. Perhaps we could put it this way. In God's eyes, circumcision of the heart represents the flag or emblem to which you pledge your loyalty and allegiance. It signifies that you have chosen to identify with the God of Israel, with his people, and the nation he has ordained. Furthermore, it declares that you are committed to following his laws, given to that nation for the betterment of yourself and your fellow man. You believe in this relationship so strongly that you are willing to commit your life to it because you love him with all your heart, soul, and strength. So then, what does this say of those in Abraham's family who refused to be circumcised in their flesh, or more importantly, in their heart? The uncircumcised male child who is not circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin, that person shall be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant. Genesis 17, verse 14. The person who refuses to be circumcised is the person who refuses to remove or deny the flesh. And as we read in Romans 8, that person cannot please God. In fact, according to Paul, that person is hostile toward God. He doesn't wish to be considered part of God's family or nation. Think of it this way. How does it make you feel to see someone desecrate, maybe even burn, the American flag? How does it make you feel to hear Americans living in America ridiculing and mocking the emblem that represents so many others who have come before them and who gave their lives for what that emblem represents? Now imagine how God feels when his people break the covenant he has been so committed to. When God's people forsake his covenant, it exceeds the disgraceful actions of those Americans who take the stars and stripes, throw it on the ground, trample it, and then burn it. They are saying, we want no part of what this represents. Likewise, when we disregard and break God's covenant, we are saying, we want no part of this. And where God's covenant is concerned, that can be very dangerous. The use of the word ot as a sign is also used in another critical period in Israel's history, during the first Passover in Egypt. In anticipation of leaving the bondage of Egypt, God instructed them to take a male lamb of the first year, slaughter it on a particular day, and then take its blood and post it upon their doors as a sign. For I will pass through the land of Egypt on that night, and will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord. Now the blood shall be a sign, in Hebrew, ot, for you on the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and the plague shall not be on you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. Exodus 12, verses 12 and 13. Later, Moses would reaffirm this promise and indicate that the blood would protect them from the destroyer. For the Lord will pass through to strike the Egyptians, and when he sees the blood on the lintel and on the two doorposts, the Lord will pass over the door and not allow the destroyer to come into your houses to strike you. Exodus 12, verse 23. What we glean from this particular example is that the sign between God and us, in this case, the blood of the Passover lamb, means the difference between life and death. To ignore the requirements whereby the sign would be present is to invite death and destruction into your home and family and your nation. So to some degree, the choice to live or to die is left to us. Behold, I set before you today a blessing and a curse. The blessing, if you obey the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you today, and the curse, if you do not obey the commandments of the Lord your God, but turn aside from the way which I command you today, to go after other gods which you have not known. Deuteronomy chapter 11, verses 26 through 28. I call heaven and earth as witnesses today against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life, that both you and your descendants may live. Deuteronomy 30, verse 19. A nation who keeps his commandments is a nation in covenant with him, a blessed nation. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord, the people he has chosen as his own inheritance. Psalm 33, verse 12. But those who turn to other gods and refuse to keep his commandments disgrace the sign between them and God. Those who abandon the covenant have either ignorantly or defiantly invited curses, death, and destruction into their borders. Understanding the life and death significance of the blood upon the door, coupled with the sign of circumcision and its relevance to the covenant, we can safely deduce that to break covenant with God leads to eventual death. To abandon God and his ways is equivalent to approaching the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and willfully eating of its deadly fruit. The result can only be one thing: exile from God and from the blessing he had previously bestowed upon those once in fellowship with him. With that in mind, let us examine more closely what happens to a nation that does just that: rejects his word, ignores the sign between it and God, breaks his covenant, and turns to other gods, other philosophies, and carnal pursuits.
This is the end of Disc 1. Please continue with Disc 2.